Okay, بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم أما بعد السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته أهلا وسهلا Welcome back to another lesson with أصول الفقه the philosophy of fiqh or the principles of fiqh depending on how you would like to translate it. Today's lesson is an interesting lesson. It can sometimes be confusing for students, this particular topic, but it's quite straightforward. Once I just do a little bit of an introduction for you here, inshallah ta'ala. So let me do that first, and let me just make sure that we are familiar with how to approach this particular topic, and that will help us, inshallah ta'ala. So if you remember, we covered already, what's called haqiqa. Covered this already, haqiqa, and we covered its counterpart, which is called the majaz. We already covered this in the previous lesson, and that we know that haqiqa literally means the literal, and majaz means the not literal or the metaphorical, if you like, the metaphorical expression. I think the word that we used for majaz was, if I remember correctly, metaphorical. Yes, we use metaphorical. Okay, so we've covered these two, and we also, just incidentally, we also talked about how you go between haqiqa and majaz, and we talked about what's called isti'ara, if you remember. Isti'ara. Isti'ara was the mechanism through which we shift between haqiqa and isti'ara. Okay, and these are the patterns that we talked about. So we've done this already in the previous videos. Why is this important? Well, just for a second, when you think about haqiqa and majaz, what you're really talking about is how something is communicated, how something is said. So let's just do a little diagram to help us. So say, for example, this person here is communicating with this person here. I'm going to draw a little diagram. And they're saying something to them. Okay. So when we think about haqiqa and majaz, we have to think about the person who's speaking, speaker, and then there's the listener. Okay. There's always, you know, at least two people, could be more, but for our purposes, we'll stick with one. So there's a speaker and there's a listener, or there could be a group of listeners. Okay. Now, sometimes people think that haqiqa and majaz, and then we have the one that I want to introduce today, sometimes can throw people off. Okay. So what I want to introduce today's lesson is what's called, for our benefit, what's called sarih and kinaya. Okay. So haqiqa and majaz are to do with the speaker. Right? When somebody says something, they could literally mean something, or they could mean it in a metaphorical sense. That's what how haqiqa and majaz are understood. Now, when it comes to focusing on the listener, we have what's called sarih and kinaya. So I'm going to write that here for you. So, haqiqa and majaz is to do with the speaker, and the alternative for the person listening is what's called sarih, and then kinaya. Okay, kinaya. Sarih basically means something that's clear, explicit. Use a different color to keep it consistent. This is how you understand it. Once you understand this, it becomes relatively easy. So sari is explicit, and kinaya is not some, is something that's not explicit, but something that requires a little bit more than this. I will go through it in a second. I think the word some authors use is what's called this one, metonymic. But I'm not going to use that word. I'm going to stick to kinaya. Okay, so this is to do with the listener. When you hear something, as soon as you hear it, If it's understood directly, clearly, we call it sari. If it's not, it requires more information, or we need to look at the context and so forth, we'll call it kinaya. So sari and kinaya come from the listener's perspective, whereas haqiq and majaz, the one that we've been covering in the previous lessons, they come from the speaker's perspective. It's as simple as that. That's how it operates. That's how they come together. So having said all of that, let's go into a little bit more just to help you. And then after this, it's really, really straightforward. Once you understand it, it's very, very straightforward. So just to remind ourselves, people sometimes think that majaz and kinaya are the same, but they're not. Clearly, they're not. Right? Some people confuse and say, well, there are some scholars who say majaz and kinaya are the same, but it seems to be that they're operating from two different perspectives. Majaz, the one that we've covered already, is information conveyed by the speaker. And kinaya is about how the listener receives that information. If he understands it directly, we call that sari. If he doesn't, we call it kinaya. Okay? So having understood all of that, let's kind of look at haqiqa and majaz again. So haqiqa is here. So something could be said which has a haqiqa, and it could be sari. So you say something, and the person who's listening to it understands it clearly. Or you say something, haqiqatan, and they don't understand it clearly. It requires more information, and that would be kinaya. Similarly, you could say something, majaz, as a majaz, and the person listening to them is clear what they mean. Or you could say something which is majaz, and it could still be kinaya for the person listening. I'm going to give you some examples. Okay, so haqiqa is sari when it's used in its literal meaning. Yeah, it's still in use, as we talked about before, what's called mustamila, and the meaning is clear. For example, when someone says, you are divorced. Somebody says that. Okay. Unequivocally, this is going to be understood by the person hearing this as sari. So it's said haqiqatan. It's understood sari. Okay. It can also be haqiqa, and it might be kinaya when it's used in its literal meaning. But its literal use is abandoned, mahjura, or impractical. We talked about before because of mutazil. For example, somebody might say there's a bug in my computer. That would be kinaya. If would be kinaya, by bug they mean there's an insect in their computer. Okay, so that's understood as a kinaya. Okay. That's just an example. Let's look at this bottom example for majaz. So majaz can be sari, where something is said in a metaphorical sense, but the people that hear it understand what it means. So for example, somebody says, sit in idda. Okay, sit in idda to their wife. That's a metaphor. That's a majaz, person said it. It's a metaphor, right? Waiting period. And this is only recognized after divorce or death. Okay? But majaz can also be kinaya, obscure. Some people use the word obscure, some people use this word. Okay? That the listener needs other information. The one that's listening, he needs other information. So when someone says, you know, the lion roared, that's majaz. Yeah. Because it's a metaphor for a brave soldier. It's a metaphor for a brave soldier. This case. And it's not common, it's not immediate apparent. So you need more context to tell you. And the way you'd know that is, for example, if somebody told you that he lo the line rode as he drove through the battlefield, as he went through the battlefield, then you know from the context that he's talking about a brave soldier. Or the person tells you themselves. So that's how haqiqa and majaz work. Haqiqa and majaz, once again, just to re-emphasize, is to do from the perspective of the speaker, and sari and kinaya is to do from the perspective, or is understood from the perspective of the one listening. So that's straightforward. I'm sure that's pretty straightforward and clear for us. Let's use some examples. Let's investigate some examples just to help us a little bit more, inshallah ta'ala. So I'm going to open a new page, and this should be quite straightforward, inshallah ta'ala. So if you've understood that, the rest of this lesson should be, I hope, quite easy. So when something is sari, it's clear that it has a clear intention and purpose. And someone says, for example, "I sold it," or someone says, "I bought it." It's clear, you know what's going on, and this is clearly an example of something being sharif. And so the ruling of sharif is that because it's clear, there's no ambiguity, we act upon it. يُجِبُ ثُبُوتُ مَعْنَاهُ بِأَيِّ طَرِيقٍ كَانَ نَوَى ذَلِكَ الْمَعْنَى أَوْ لَمْ يَكُنْ. So applied, the ruling is applied, and we don't need, no need of intention. Because it's clear, why do you need intention for it? It's clear what they meant. That's how Sari works. Very straightforward. So this means that the understanding that's expressed by a Sari expression will be established regardless of how it's going to be delivered. Right? It can be part of a major, a part of a sentence, or even be an attribute. But because it gives a clear meaning, the intention of the one expressing it becomes redundant. There's no need to look into that intention. So this means that divorce will occur irrespective of the intention of the individual when he says something like, "You are divorced." Somebody says, "You are divorced." Person saying it, the person receiving it, right? It's clear what they mean. It's very clear, and it's sorry. Remember, receiving person, sorry. And there's a hakiki manner for it. Just clear. There's no need for intention in this. When they receive it, that's what it means. Another example might be if somebody intentionally or even accidentally says to their slave, "You are free. You are free." The slave will be free because it's clear, and so there's no need for intention. Okay, straightforward. Alhamdulillah. Nothing difficult there, I hope. Nothing too convoluted. Once you understand the slide that I did before, this becomes very, very easy. Okay, so sari is unequivocal in giving its meaning, and there's no need to look into the establishing of it. Let's look like an example in fiqh. Let's take an example in fiqh, and that might help us a little bit more. So in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Al-Ma'idah, a surah that my older daughter is memorizing at the moment. In Surah Al-Ma'idah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in verse number 6, he talks about this idea that if you can't find water, then take clean sand or earth, then you rub your face and hands and so forth. So Allah says, "Walaki yuridu liyutahhirakum." Allah intends to liyutahhirakum. This word is actually quite important. Liyutahhirakum. Okay. purified. This is from the Quran. And the thing with the Hanafis is when something is mentioned in the Quran, we stick to the literal word of the Quran as much as possible. This shows that the whole function of tayammum, the whole purpose of tayammum is what? This is a question. This is a big question. Is to give purity based on this verse in the Quran. Okay? Tayammum grants you purity, just like water would. Because this is mentioned in the Quran. Of course, other schools contend this. One objection is that if the verse is Sari, in this regard, and one of the ruling of Sari is that there is no requirement of intention. We mentioned this before. Remember when we drew our diagram? When it's clear for the person listening to this, Sari to them, no intention. But the Hanafis do actually say that there is an intention required for tayammum. So what's our reply to this as Hanafi Jews? Well, the reply is quite simple, is that the intention required for tayammum is not for the, you know, the break, you know, to become a purifying agent. Rather, it's to be used as a replacement. Separate thing. We're using it, it's a different intention. We're using this as a badal, what we call a badal, replacement in Arabic. Okay? But the verse itself, walakin yurid litahhirakum, it has a hakiki mana. When you hear it, it's sari, and you know what it means. And so there's no intention required for it. Okay? The only intention we use, the only reason they have intention for, is not to make the sand or the dust pure, but to use it as a replacement for water. There's another objection which I just want to allude to here, if I may, which is that there's another objection aimed at the sari nature of the verse in declaring tayammum an agent of purity, and this comes from position of Imam Shafi'i. Rahimahullahu ta'ala, may Allah be pleased with him. And according to Imam Shafi, or one account, is because for Imam Shafi, the way he, because we see as a badal, we see as a replacement. For Imam Shafi, he sees tayammum as a necessity. Depending on how you view something, will impact the ruling or the way you kind of come out with rulings. So Imam Shafi, for him, tayammum is prescribed as a necessity, and because in its nature soil is contaminated, and that which is contaminated is not really purifying. Okay? And the Sharia allows it as a purifying agent because of lack of water. Sharia allows it with lack of water. You don't have water, so you can use tayammum. And soil obviously is readily available. Another position is that tayammum is a concealing agent. It conceals, according to Imam Shafi. So there's this two positions, A and B. It conceals. And so therefore, it does not actually purify. Does not actually purify. It kind of like just covers it. It does not actually purify. Of course, we take a different position. But this is the two positions that are mentioned from Imam Shafi, may Allah be pleased with him. Water is really the purifier. But because it's not available at the time of prayer, tayammum conceals the impurity. So this word conceal and necessity are very, very important. Until water comes and then it invalidates it. Okay. Now the Hanafis take the sarih of this verse, of this particular word in the Quran. For us, it is purification. So for the Hanafis, it itself, tayammum itself, is purifying. You're wondering what on earth has this got to do with anything? It has everything to do with the Masail that would come out of it. I'll show you in a second. When we say the compelling argument is the Sari of the Quran is very, very clear. So this is straightforward, this is easy. Now, based on your reasoning, based on the way you frame it, or the way you see this debate, will result in various outcomes. Let me give an example. I'll give you a few examples, inshallah. So, bismillah. So, for example, this can impact the validity of tayammum before the prayer time. So one would be permitted to perform tayammum before the onset of a prayer time according to the Hanafis. So just to write it here, tayammum before prayer time. Now look at this. According to the Hanafis, you can do tayammum before prayer time. That's valid, according to the Hanafis. The Shafi'is would say no, not allowed. Because according to us, tayammum is a purifying agent. Yeah. And so it's just like doing wudu before the prayer actually starts, which you can do. Because for us, remember, it's a badal. Yeah, it's the badal. But the Shafi'is say, well, due to necessity, due to your need, you can only do something to the extent that is necessary. So you can only do tayammum when the prayer time enters, and not before it. See? Can you see how a simple debate leads to different positions within the mazahib? Let me give you some more examples. Let me just rub this out and try and stay in this page, inshallah. This is the second example. Number two for you. Okay. Multiple prayers or multiple fard prayers. You can see where this is going to go. For the Hanafis, you can do this. You can pray multiple prayers in their own times. And this is valid according to the Hanafis with the same tayammum. Right, so it's not like, you know, if you do tayammum for Asr, you have to do a separate tayammum for Maghrib. Because why? The tayammum is a badal, it's purifying in of itself. Okay. The Shafi'i say no. Because you're doing tayammum out of necessity, you're doing it purely of necessity. Every single time the prayer time is over, the necessity is over. Once the necessity is over, the necessity of purity is no longer, and so tayammum terminates. When the time for new prayer begins, you need to do tayammum again. You can see that this simple linguistic debate around what it means can have huge ramifications in terms of the practice of the mas'ala. Let me give you another one based on this debate. It's number three here. The issue of the imam's purity. Issue of the imam's purity. So the Hanafis say that if the imam is leading the prayer after he's performed tayammum, for example, he is permitted to do so even if everybody behind him has done wudu with water. Yeah. So if you perform, this means that whoever has performed either of the two is pure and their status is equal. Okay, so you can pray behind an imam, and if he has done tayammum for some reason or another, and everybody else behind him has done wudu with water, their status is equal. Why? Because for us as Hanafis, he is pure. Purification. It's a badal. It's a replacement. It's fine. Right? So for us, it's fine. But for the Shafi'is, you can see they would say no. because the imam has done it out of necessity, and because he's done it out of necessity, this is a weaker form of prayer. Right? Because tayammum actually conceals the impurity, and therefore his prayer is weaker. And the one who has a weaker form of prayer, a weaker sifa in their prayer, cannot lead with someone who has a stronger sifa in their prayer. Okay, so this is important. Okay, so we're okay with that. Let me just give you one more, maybe a few more examples, just to show you, because a lot of students find this fascinating. But this whole debate comes from usul al-fiqh. This whole debate stems from usul al-fiqh. What about tayammum during illness? Yeah. Tayammum during illness. The Ahnaf will say that when you're ill, you can perform tayammum, whether there is a genuine fear of losing the functionality of a limb or fear of death. And even there is no such fear. Because tayammum again is pure. The Shafi's would say, well, if there's no fear of losing a limb or a fear of death arising from ablution, and no other reason except acceptable to excuse the wudu in favor of tayammum. This is because the necessity is not established. You have to establish the necessity. This all comes out of this debate. Okay. So this is another one. Let me give you another one, number five. If your since Ramadan is coming soon, if your fear, if you fear missing Eid prayer, or funeral prayer, you can see where I'm going with this. Okay, the Hanafis say that if you fear that you're going to miss the Eid prayer or the funeral prayer by going to do wudu somewhere, then you're actually allowed to do tayammum. And because tayammum is a purifying, it has a purifying effect, it's perfectly fine. This is also because, according to Hanafis, there's no replacement for the janazah and for the Eid prayer. Once you miss it, you miss it. Once you miss it, you've missed it. There's no qaza for it. So you're going to lose the opportunity to perform Eid prayer. You're going to lose the opportunity to perform a funeral prayer. Just do tayammum. Get into the masjid or get into whatever you need to and perform the prayer. Because there's no qaza for it. There's no badal for it. Right? The Shafi'is disallow this because they do have an opinion that actually there is a qaza. So for them, there is a qaza for them. Okay. And because there's an alternative, there is no necessity established, and therefore you can't do tayammum. Imam Shafi, Hanafi, they are all consistent, by the way, in their rationale. This is why usul al-fiqh is so useful, because it maintains that sense of consistency. I'll give you one more. The intention. We talked about this, but let's just look at it one more time. The intention when performing tayammum. The Hanafis say that the intention for tayammum is that an agent of purity is being used to gain purity. The Shafi'is do not see tayammum as an agent of purity. It doesn't grant purity. We see purity as an agent, like it actually does purify you. The Shafi'is, no, it covers it. It's just out of necessity. Right? If it doesn't grant purity, then the intention using it is not valid too. Rather, one should intend to perform the necessary prayer with tayammum, which will only mask the impurity due to necessity of the first salah. Again, this is the differences between the Shawafi and the Hanafi. So this is just to show you how Sari works in practice. Now, we've already done some work on Kinaya, so I'm just going to quickly run through Kinaya, not spend too much time on it. It's worth just reminding ourselves that Kinaya and Sari come from the perspective of the listener. We've looked at sarih. Let's look at some examples of kinaya. So, kinaya is something that's sort of obscure. Yeah? It's obscure in some way, shape, form. And the way we kind of make sense of it, when a word is equivocal or unclear, we need some help here. And usually words that are figurative majaz fall into this category as well. Okay. Now, any word, as we said, when it's communicated, whether it's haqiqa, whether it's majaz, can fall into kinaya, like I gave you the examples before. Okay. But what we can make sense, what can help us is we need to look at intention. The intention is one factor. So the one who says it, remember I talked about this diagram. The one who said it, we look at the intention here. What was the intention? The only way we know is that when you reveal the intention. Or B, or two, there is what we call, what I would call circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence. So we look at the context. When did they say it? The one context where they're saying it. These two things will help us to resolve kinaya. So there's this idea of eliminating or reducing ambiguity. The one who hears the word should know know the intention behind the words. This person here, clearly. They should know what the intention behind the words are. Or the situation, the circumstance in which the words were said are known. So, say for example, husband and wife have an argument and the argument moves along to the conversation or argument around divorce and the man uses the figurative expression. Majaz, and he says, you are separate. This man says this. You are separate. This is clearly, this will be considered issue of divorce, even if the husband was to plead that he did not intend to. Because he might say he doesn't have the intention, but the circumstantial evidence proves this. Okay. So there must be evidence that either says that, if he says he hasn't got intention, well, then what about the circumstantial evidence? That clearly shows that there was intention of divorce there. Okay. That's what it is. Okay. The Sheikh, the author, talks about other ideas, but I'm not going to go into all of them because it kind of gets a little bit interesting, but we'll leave that done, inshallah ta'ala. Okay. Now, due to the nature of kinaya, this is just a separate discussion, we'll end here, inshallah ta'ala. Due to the nature of kinaya, because it's ambiguous, the hini meaning, you cannot have no legal punishments from kinaya. No legal punishments can occur. So if somebody wants to confess using kinaya words, and to a crime punishable in the Sharia, the punishment cannot be carried out because for a punishment in the Sharia, a clear confession is required. Okay, it needs to be sarih. Because punishments cannot have any element of doubt in them. And kinaya, by nature, carries doubt. So, for example, if somebody was to confess to adultery with the words, yes, I committed an unlawful act, it's not clear enough as a confession as to what he is saying. So if he's saying, you know, somebody wants to say to this person, right? The word being said is not clear. The word being this, what's been heard, or sentence being heard is not clear. So it's not sari, and it doesn't mean, it's not sari, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're confessing to adultery. Another example is if someone's mute, and they use sign language to commute an admittance of adultery, this cannot be accepted as a confession due to there's some sort of ambiguity here. Similarly, in the case of defamation, if a person accuses another of adultery and a third person provides evidence based by saying you told the truth, it is inadmissible in this form because he could be testifying to the truth of individual in a defamation claim or something else. And this comes to this idea of the Sharia is all about mercy. There's a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ that's shubuhat. So even you see how hadith operate in usul when there's doubts, right? You ward off the punishment. Okay, I'll stop there. If anyone may have questions, they can ask. But if you understand this diagram here, then it should be very, very easy to work out how Sharif and Kinaya work in principle. Okay, I hope you found that useful. If you have any questions, you can ask. Otherwise, there's no lesson next week, but inshallah, we'll resume in 2 weeks' time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.